Are you a UBC student taking first year economics, math, chemistry, or physics?
That stuff is hard.
Are you feeling like you need some tutoring? That's okay, because the AMS offers free and appointment tutoring for students in these subjects.
Whoa!
How does it work?
It's on a first-come, first-served basis, and there's no need to sign up. Just show up with your books and your questions.
Whoa!
When does it happen?
Monday to Thursday from 3 to 7 at the Sub Pacific Spirit Cafeteria, located beside the Starbucks.
Whoa!
A+, here I come.
Friends to dine, we will discuss the moment when we should all be lying. We should all be lying. We should.
CITR 101.9 FM presents Sky Larkin, Sunday, October 18th at Pub 340. Sky Larkin are a UK-based trio led by lead singer Katie Harkin, who since signing to Wichita Records last year have toured the UK with Conor Oberst, released their stellar debut, The Golden Spike, and toured the US with friends Los Campesinos. Somehow they still managed to escape major notice stateside.
Don't let them escape without having seen them live. Sunday, October 18th at Pub 340.
With special guests Peggy Sue and Valerie Graham and the Mutineers. Presented by CITR 101.9 FM.
Now.
About is Bleak.
Is that so?
Oh, so that is. I mean, just take a look around.
Bleak brought this from me a year ago, man. This is a rare, out-of-print bird.
Look, I'm a delivery man making deliveries. And any static, take it up with Bleak.
Bleak, 2 E's, 1 K. Right now, I'd like to bring to the stage a fine musician, as well a very dear friend. Please give a warm welcome to Mr. Bleak.
Hello, fans. This is Exquisite Corpse Radio on CITR 101.9 Vancouver. Thanks for coming to Canada's favorite radio show. Exquisite Corpse. I'm hearing a lot of weird feedback. I don't know what that is. There's a lot of noise here. Tonight, we're going to be featuring what we've been talking about for a few weeks now, the Copyright Copyleft Festival coming up next week. And we'll talk to you about that a little bit more. A couple of the acts that are coming to town, of course, will be People Like Us and Negative Land. A couple of the people that I'm particularly excited about. So, in the last 24 hours period, I have interviewed Mark Hostler of Negative Land and Vicky Bennett of People Like Us, and you will be hearing those interviews tonight on Exquisite Corpse Radio. So, get that tape rolling. So, we are going to start off the show with Vicky Bennett of People Like Us. Now, I was very tired 6 this morning when I interviewed Vicky Bennett. So I was kind of a little bit shy about presenting this in its current form the way it is, but that's just the way it is. But she was wonderful to speak to, and I was very proud to talk to her. I'm going to be very excited to meet her next week at the festival, Copyright Copyleft. So without much more ado, here is Vicky Bennett speaking to me this morning.
This is Exquisite Corpse Radio on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. And on the line now is Vicky Bennett, also known as People Like Us.
Hello. I guess that's where I say hello.
Okay. And, okay, so you are playing next week on Thursday.
Yes, Thursday evening at, actually, you probably know the address better than I do for describing to people.
It's at the Scotiabank Center downtown in Vancouver here. And well, I'll announce that during the show. Well, this is a pre-recording, so we're not on air right now.
Yeah, but, I know. Yeah. Otherwise, it would be the middle of the night for me.
Yeah. Scotiabank Dance Center, 677 Davie Street. That's where that is.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're looking forward to seeing you out here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great festival. I'm so glad that they invited me, because I would have been really jealous if I'd seen that lineup of people and not being there myself. And also, I've been wanting to come to Vancouver for a number of years, and I kept waiting for someone to ask me, so it's great.
Oh, really? I should have asked you before. So the topic is the copyright copyleft. So again, people are going to have to talk about the issues of copyright. And is it a bit? Is it getting a bit tiresome?
Yes, yes. but you know, I get to come to Vancouver.
Okay.
You know, if you weigh it up, you know, it's actually it's worth it.
Well, it is beautiful here.
Yes,
I have to say.
But yeah, I do think that paranoia is a very bad, it's very bad for creativity. So the copyright thing, it doesn't do anyone any good talking about it. It just makes everyone hyped up and scared and opinionated. And I don't see what that's got to do with art. And I'm an artist. But like I said, if people invite me to do these festivals, what I'm doing is very topical to that subject. So it's, I'm a very legitimate person in that festival to be there, even though on the whole, I mean, if people just ask me to do panels, I say no.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because I, like I said, I don't want to call people's attention to that, because there's been no need to do that in history of visual art. So I don't, or with as recently as Bob Dylan and folk music in the 60s, you know, it's a very small amount of time on the grand scale of people making art that people are going on and on about this. And really, it's going to sound so dated too in a few decades' time.
Yes. I was talking to Mark Hosfer about Greg Gillis of Girl Talk and what he's able to just sort of get away with these days, because they've because you people have really broken ground for this medium, for the plunderphonics, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely broken creative ground, but I mean, you know, some of the others in the festival have broken a bit more than that. But, luckily I haven't been broken by it, rather. But yeah, I'd like to think that I'm a pioneer in collage, and that's the way I see it. I don't really use the plunder word, and that's no disrespect to Plunderphonic, which is an amazing album, or any kind of movement that was energized by that. But you know, I see what I do as collage, and collage is a medium, a genre, all kinds of things with a great tradition in the creative arts. So yeah, I'm actually more that, but it doesn't mean I'm not also a number of other things, you know.
Right. So you came upon, you first discovered collage, I guess, while listening to Steve Stapleton of Nurse with Wound.
He was one of them, and it was before I had any sense of self-awareness, you know, because when you're younger, you know, and unless you're lucky, you're just stumbling around. But actually, I'm still stumbling around with what I'm doing, but I didn't actually know about the history of collage, or that there were other artists doing things like what I was, just because I was just doing stuff in my living room, you know, tapes. But then I sent 5 tapes out to record companies, and Christ and Stolplatt in Holland got back to me, and then it was actually through going to their shop that they actually said, oh, you should hear this, you should hear this. And, but I'd already heard Nurse of Wounds, but they introduced me to stuff like the Tape Beatles and CRISPR, that's Expert XR, him as well.
Oh, yeah, okay. Good. Do you, you don't like to identify yourself with the maybe Sonic Outlaw term or...
Well, I love the film by Craig Baldwin. I agree. I mean, if the push comes to shove, I'm in there with everyone else fighting. But I don't believe in extreme thoughts, and things aren't black and white. They're always grey in these areas. And it's not, I'm not rejecting anything. It's just I want to take a positive approach to things. And I do believe that too much time could be taken with negative speak about this C word. Yeah. It's all about you can't do this. What are you allowed to do? Like it's some school teacher or something. When in fact, you know, I think the artist pretty much has artistic right within the rules of their morality or beyond, unless they're a lunatic, of course. But which is a lot of artists. But anyway, that's beside the point. I think, you know, there's a right of the artist to create and reflect based around what's around them. And it so happens that in the last 40 years, it's been a world increasingly of media. And I was having a conversation last night, and we were saying, well, what are we going to be thinking of the zero decade to be that we're in at the moment? It's like we kind of were able to identify the 80s, and, you know, God knows we're getting it all thrown back at us now anyway. Nice. And I was saying this is the decade of fast communication and easy access. You know, I think that's how it's going to be seen now. And the thing is, it's normal now to access whatever you want. And we're living in a Google culture, and we're making Google-based art. And I think that's brilliant.
So I'm just wondering if doing the work that you're doing has kind of forced you into being an activist in some ways.
Yeah, it has, but which is... Well, I mean, I'm a kind of passive activist, you know, because I don't make things to deliberately challenge the law. That's not where I'm coming from. But I use well-known sources, both with my sound and my moving image, which obviously come into that the context of that. So I'd say I'm not political, but, you know, I've certainly been politicised. Just by the age that we live in, but that isn't to say that I don't enjoy it too, because it's fun.
Have there been any consequences of your work, your sampling?
No, none whatsoever, actually. So, and I've been making this stuff for about 17 years now.
So why do you suppose people care so much sometimes when negative land has gotten a lot of... They've had to really go out there and fight, and some people... people like you, I guess, and Girl Talk have sort of escaped any prosecution. I don't know.
Sorry, Karen.
No, I'm sorry. I'm losing my thoughts.
We've got this little time difference.
It's so early for me.
I'll be quiet.
It's okay. So you haven't experienced any consequences, that sort of thing?
No, only people saying, "Oh, when are you going to do some more?" That's the consequences of what I do.
Well, we're all looking forward to more.
Yes, so am I. It will be the world premiere of my new live set.
Oh, good.
Yes.
So what does playing live entail for you?
It's a kind of... It's a bit of a retro term, but it's live cinema that I do, because I use moving images of found footage, which in this case are all major feature films that have all been manipulated in ways that are... The pleasure of it this time is that it's going to be really obvious how I've manipulated it, because you're going to recognise what it all came from, where it came from and what I've done with it. So there's a cinema screen with these moving images on with the sound coming through my mixing desk, and then I have two CD players playing compositions that I've scripted to work with the cinema thing. So it's a kind of scripted cinema thing. I'm maybe the modern version of that organ that used to come out of the ground. Except I hope that I'd be the support act.
But the what that comes out of the ground?
The cinema organ that comes out, and everyone goes, oh no, you know. But they play the cinema organ before the film comes on.
Okay.
I'm that.
Good. So you get it. It's going to be video.
Yes.
Are you working a lot in video these days?
Yeah. My main source of income is because I'm a self-employed artist. My main source of income is from film commissions and art films. Well, not art films, but fine art films. And I've made a number of short films that you can find through people like us.org and download them.
Good. You also can you be found on the ubu.com?
Yes, I'm there as well. It all kind of goes back to either ubu.com or WFMU or my own site. There's crossovers in what material there is, but you can definitely, to find the most, you can look at my site. But Ubu's such fun anyway, I can go there too.
Are you still doing Do or DIY at WFMU?
I am, but my last show of the season was actually last week, and I only do summer seasons because it's quite a lot of work actually, and I've only got so much creative energy in a week, and so I do a burst of it from June to October, and then I take the rest off until the next year. But I'll be back next year.
I'm coming back. Good.
Yeah. Yeah, that's wfmu.org/peoplelikeus.
Yeah.
Final
posts. WFMU, New Jersey.
Hmm.
So, in the shadow of New York, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, you've been doing stuff recently with Ergo Fizmiz that I found quite entertaining.
Yeah.
I'm having trouble thinking here.
Perpetuum Mobile. Rhapsody in Glue.
Rhapsody in Glue, yes.
Yeah. And we did a podcast on WFMU called Cod Paste, which eventually became Rhapsody in Glue as an album.
Oh, and that was hilarious. It's wonderful.
That was fun. That was fun to do.
Yeah, it's wonderful stuff, and it's showing the use of humor, I think, in sound collage, which I think is often missing in many artists, and that's why your stuff I find so entertaining. It's some of my favorite stuff.
It's the bottom line of what I do is humour, because I think humour is a really great form of communication that can cross all kinds of barriers that other things can't. So, well, plus the fact that I've got a sense of humour.
Right. Oh, what is it about Take On Me that you like?
I think it's just aha.
Aha.
They just make me laugh. And the video to that song, I always think the video, which was, an illustration of them. And there's a great parody of that actually in Family Guy. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah, I did see that. Yeah. I haven't seen much Family Guy, but it is hilarious.
Yeah, he got grabbed, he was walking to see the cinema, and he got grabbed into a freezer and into the video, which is just so brilliant, such a great bit of appropriation there.
Yeah, it is. What is the name People Like Us? What does that mean?
It was a name I thought up because it's a kind of word, a kind of expression that you find when people really believe in something and mean it. And so it's always people like us, blah, blah, blah. And also, if you use a name that's part of an expression, it's great for sampling because it's turning up on the radio and TV all the time. And that was back at the beginning of People Like Us. So I was a lot more into sampling people saying, and now People Like Us, blah, blah, blah.
People Like Us give People Like Us a bad name.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Who are the Jet Black Hair people?
That's a chap who's now in Negative Land, actually, Peter Conheim.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
So far, so good.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if it's even on the CD packaging, your name, so I don't think it is. I'm not very forward with information on my stuff.
It's on the download I had of your work with Wobbly.
All right,
people like us, Wobbly and Jet Black Hair people, and what's the use?
We used to do a lot of gigs around the Bay Area, and then I've sort of worked with Wobbly solo since then, and because of my changes in geography, you know, traveling, it's been less of that in this decade, and you know, with this 5 years, and I'm more working with Ergo Fismish just because he's in the same country as me, and it helps.
Oh, he seems to be a kind of a sonic kindred spirit.
Yeah. It's difficult to find someone you can work with really well. So, you know, I've been lucky. I mean, Ergo has brought out parts of people like us that weren't there before. For instance, you know, I mean, compositionally it's similar, but he actually plays instruments and we decided to sing, which I didn't think that I'd ever do. And so that was a fun exercise in pop.
Yeah, what's he like?
Very talented, very much an artist. I mean, difficult to say, very, very busy all the time. And funny.
Yeah. What is... Oh, sorry. Is yodeling inherently funny?
I guess if you're standing on the side of a mountain, it would be very difficult to listening to Mary Schneider, Australia's Queen of Yodel. So I'd say it's funny to a point, but if you really needed to yell at someone across the mountain, it's probably not very funny.
So what is yes. How about
it seems like a cultural extreme to me, you know, and I like things that makes me laugh, much like I've used a lot of German music, you know, people jumping around village halls and that sort of thing, just because it makes me laugh and it brings up visual pictures, you know, it brings up in my imagination things that are amusing to me.
Yeah. So John Oswald's going to be at the festival as well. Have you seen him in a while?
Yeah, I saw him last year. We were both playing the same festival in Bilbao in Spain. So, yeah, we have bumped into each other two or three times.
Oh, did they make you talk about copyright again?
Yeah. That was another copyright festival, yes.
Do you think it'll ever... Do you think we're coming to a point where... A group of you will be playing together and not have to talk about the copyright aspect?
Well, what's ironic about this, which is actually the first time I've thought about it, so I hope I don't quickly forget it in a moment, is the whole nature of going on about these things is recycling itself anyway, which is kind of almost illegal. You know, I mean, I don't think that people wanting to sue other people and get their money is ever going to go away. I think it's quite a central part of the commercial world. But I do think that things will change and loosen up as time goes on, because people will realise that you can't get everyone.
Because I kind of look at sampling, like in the way that you do, is almost free advertising for these people. I mean, you know where it's coming from. Like, good heavens, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not slander in my case. It's a complete homage. I'd never use anything I don't like. Why would I want to dirty my work up with things I don't like and things that make me sad, you know? This is all a joy. This is the joy of music and the joy of art that I'm celebrating, and I want to share it with other people. And what's more, if everyone would go away singing the songs that I've used. And it's not like if I used Frank Sinatra that suddenly all these records disappear. I mean, I'm just adding to it, and that's the culture. And you know, as well as being a collage artist, I'm a folk artist of 2009.
Do you have a lot? You have a lot of releases out.
Like, yeah, I have had. Yeah, I mean, I've released a lot of CDs and LPs, but I tend not to bother actually now. I tend to just put things straight online, or if it's a short film, it gets screened, and then I put it on Ubuweb.
people can go to peopleLikeUs.org and find most of it, right?
All of it, I think.
All of it, almost.
Yeah, except for anything I've done in the last 6 months, which, you know, I might be under contract that I can't put it online yet. But everything eventually turns up on or via my site, Uberweb or WFMU.org.
Are you making an okay living at this?
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah. Not fantastic, but not terribly. The in-between bit. And I exist on, you know, commissions, arts commissions, cultural commissions, that kind of thing, and the occasional gig, which now I've got a new live set, I'll hopefully have a few more.
So it's possible.
Yes,
it's possible
totally.
To live your dreams.
It is. I mean, if you live in America, I don't think it is, unless you've got some kind of backup money.
It's not ironic. I think people used to go to America to live their dreams, and now they've got to escape.
Yeah, land of the free, yeah. But yeah, I mean, if you're living in Europe, I think which the UK apparently is a part of, you can definitely make a living as an artist if you work hard, as I'm sure you can in Canada as well.
Yeah, I think we do okay.
Yeah, you've got a pretty good system there. I don't know what the Americans are going on about.
Who are you?
Well,
I'm the constable.
Oh,
I don't think they know either.
Yeah. They have a vested interest in tearing us down.
Well, I'm the constable.
Yes.
Who are you?
And lying about us.
Well, every country's got another country. We've got the French.
Who are you?
So there you go.
I'm actually dual citizen, so US and Canada, yes.
Oh, that's pretty good.
But I'm from the Seattle area, so I'm not far from home.
Who are you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've been to the airport.
The airport?
yeah, Seattle. I landed there once and then drove somewhere in Washington State. I can't remember where.
Yeah. So what you'll be presenting on Thursday night, what's it going to be exactly?
It's going to be my new project is going under the name Genre Collage, because collage is a genre, and I'm collaging well-known films, all the different film genres together. So yeah, right. It's called Genre Collage, and so you'll recognize lots of people in it, and lots of corresponding contextual music I've composed for it as well, and it's all brand new film, brand new compositions. So it's been a lot of work actually since about March this year. I've been working pretty much full time on it. Yeah.
Good. So how long are you in town for?
Just under a week actually. We've been it's pretty good. so yeah, I'll get over some bit of jet lag before playing, and then I'm off home.
Okay. Well, I hope you enjoy yourself here.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, hope you can make it along, everyone. Hope you can make it along as well.
Beautiful land. Yeah, I'm
good. Gorgeous.
Yeah. I'll definitely be there. Say hello.
Yeah, do.
Okay.
Is your show archived at all? You know, an audio archive.
Oh, yeah, there's podcasts going way back, yeah. Yeah,
all right,
it's not a pretty thing. Yeah. I wouldn't recommend it or anything. It's college radio. I have very little time to research for it or prepare. And then when I get on the air, I'm still flying by the seat of my pants when I get in there. So.
Okay. Well,
anyway,
I'll go there and have a look.
But we do a thing every year in January 17th called 24 Hours of Radio Art.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where. Well, basically, we take the ideas of one of the Fluxus artists, basically, Robert Filliou.
Mm-hmm.
He came up with the idea of art's birthday, which fell on his birthday. So we do, every year, January 17th, we do our 24 hours of basically sound collage or some kind of radio experimentations.
Yeah.
And so about that time, or, you know...
that's great.
A month or two before, I'm out searching for artists who want to contribute an hour or something to do our 24 hours of radio art. So
yeah.
So maybe maybe I could do
I'd have to check with WFMU because I could do a DIY or something like that.
Oh, I think that would be so fantastic. I would be so excited.
Yeah, I mean, I'll have to check their policy because it changes, because they have these things that they're tied in with being a non-commercial station, and they've got some weird rules that affect them. But I'll check them first, and I'll let you know, and please remind me as well.
Could do maybe a little bit of something that wasn't do or DIY, I don't know.
Yeah, sure.
I had Chris Burke was on a couple years ago, and that was exciting for me. You know Chris Burke at all?
Know the name, but that's all.
He's done stuff now at this thing called This Spartan Life, which...
Right, that sounds familiar as well.
Interview that takes place in game space.
Ah.
So they're interviewing people while they're walking around I think it's one of the Halo games.
Yeah.
But I know nothing about video games, so...
Nor do I.
But it is funny to watch.
Yeah.
And he's a very creative person. He's one of my first big influences when it comes to the sampling culture. I do stuff as Value Village people.
Yeah, I know. I know your name. I've known your name for some time, but I don't think I've heard anything that you've done.
Okay, well, I'll hand you something while you're in town.
Yeah, do. Thank you. Yeah.
And it's stuff that it's stuff that's fun for me. It's stuff that I want to hear. You know.
Mm.
And it's not really. You know how it is. You make stuff that turns you on, but maybe necessarily doesn't work for everyone.
But after a while, you can start it starts communicating with other people as well, I think.
Yeah,
and I hope.
Got some pretty good feedback from it. So.
Good.
I'll hand you one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, or MP3 links are good too, because I don't have many shelves here. I like drives with MP3s.
Right. I feel sometimes that people get overwhelmed with links and people send an email, oh, check this out, because I get email from having a show on the radio. I get so many friend requests from my Facebook or MySpace or whatever.
It's like,
it's like, please just leave me alone. I don't have time to listen to all your.
But that's why I don't do it, because it's a real drain of your energy, and I don't do any of that.
Yeah, and that's why I usually leave people alone too.
Yeah.
It's been my pleasure to talk to you. You are you have no idea how you inspire me.
Thank you. That's very
You're
nice
the wind beneath my wings.
Thank you.
Okay.
That's great. Thank you.
And since I know you so well now, I'll send you some links or something.
Yeah, perhaps. That'd be great. Thank you.
Okay.
And I'll see you next week. And I'm doing a question and answers thing. I think that, or a talk. You know, before the gig, they're doing a talk.
Yeah,
I'm doing that as well.
7 p.m. So great.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, then I'll see you then.
Yeah. Good.
Looking forward to it. Okay.
Yeah. Same here. All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for getting up.
Sure.
It's very good of you to get up to do this. So.
Oh, wow. Anyway, thanks. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, then.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Now, for those who are huddled around radios in the forgotten corners of the world, CITR 101.9, I will listen to you. These are my heroes. They work hard, and they give back, and they keep going without complaint.
And this is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. That was me and Vicky Bennett from early this morning talking on over Skype, which actually worked out pretty well, actually. We are going to be playing the interview with Mark Hostler that I did late last night, and that is coming up in about 15 minutes. I'm gonna make you wait for that one. For now, we're going to be
We're going to be bringing you this message about something that we're talking about.
Oh, well, would help if the volume was up.
3, 2, 1, that's the letter U and the numeral 2. Is that the way I say that? I don't know how to say it.
From the 21st to the 24th of October, Vancouver New Music present Copyright, Copy Left, a festival of sonic collagism and the art of sampled and repurposed sounds and images.
The 2009 Vancouver New Music Festival features over 15 local, national, and international sound and video artists who use the art of sampling and remixing to add their voice to issues of copyright, art making, and cultural politics.
Wednesday, October 21st features Andrew O'Connor, Jackson Two Bears, and John Oswald. Thursday, October 22nd, Eric Hedekar, DJ Tapes, Chris Cutler, and People Like Us.
Friday, October 23rd, Sonarchy, Holzkopf, Scanner, and David Shea. Saturday, the 24th of October, Negative Land's Mark Hostler and Uri Kane.
Show starts 8 p.m. each night. Free artist chats at 7 p.m. each night. Copyright, copy left. At the Scotiabank Dance Center, 677 Davie Street. Brought to you by Vancouver New Music and CITR 101.9 FM.
You're here at Exquisite Corpse Radio. Thanks for dropping by Canada's favorite radio show. This is DJ Bleakin with you live tonight at about 6 minutes after 8 o'clock. We just heard the interview with Vicky Bennett of People Like Us. She is going to be playing Thursday night at the Copyright Copy Left Festival at the Scotiabank Dance Center, as you just heard on that fine PSA done by our friend Luke. And I'm sure another friend who I can't quite place. The vocals are, you know. Anyway, let's hear some People Like Us now from... this is the Copy Left sampler that Vancouver New Music gave the station. Gonna hear a track from People Like Us, Blue Bayou, from the album All Together Now on Exquisite Corpse Radio.
We'll be right back.
There is some Holtzkopf for you, and he is one of the artists that will be at the Copyright Copyleft Festival. And the day he will be there is, what, Friday, I believe it is? Yes, Friday. And another artist that will be there is David Shea. David Shea, we will be playing that in the background as we're speaking now, because I have to tell you some stuff. I have tickets to give away for the Friday show and the Saturday show. So we are about... We're just a couple minutes away from the Negative Land interview, which lasts nearly 40 minutes. So we're just about there. But we're going to tell you, Luke gave away tickets yesterday morning on his show for the Wednesday and Thursday shows. On Friday, we have Sonarchy from Vancouver, Holtzkopf from Vancouver, Scanner from the UK, David Shea from the US and Australia. Saturday, we have Mark Hostler of Negative Land giving his presentation, which he'll tell you about in just a couple minutes. Yuri Crane from the U.S. Evidently closes out the night. And on Saturday at 2:30 p.m. at the Scotiabank Dance Center as well, there's a discussion about copyright, copyleft, intellectual property rights, and art with Peter Hatch, Doug Horn, Mark Hostler, Martha Rands, and the... Aja Rose Bond, moderated by Kate Milbury. This is all this information at newmusic.org. That's where you can find the music on the Copyright Copyleft Festival. Now, I'm going to be playing some of this track from David Shea, and while it is playing, give me a call at 822-CITR, 822-2487, and win the tickets right now to the Friday. You plus one person. I need your whole name, and you can win tickets to the Friday Copyright Copyleft Festival. So give me a call. 822-2487.
Present Halloween the Boneyard, Saturday, October 31st, 2009, at the Biltmore Cabaret and the Astoria. Party 1 at the Biltmore will have performances by Fandef, special guests from Los Angeles, Jeremy J, and special guests from Germany, Circle Square, with DJs Maggie Hesden, Sincerely Hana, and Jamie. Party 2 at the Astoria will feature No Gold and Bogus Togus Live, with Night Shift DJs Tyler Fedchuk and Justin G. Doors are at 9 p.m. and the parties go till late, with a $250 best costume prize at each party. Tickets for both shows available at Zulu, Scratch, and Red Cat Records. Brought to you by CITR, Color Magazine, Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Lindsay'sDiet.com, ChalkedUp.com, and Glory Days, happening every Saturday at the Biltmore from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m.
Okay, I don't know if anybody heard me correctly here. Tickets, you plus one person, Friday. The Scotiabank Dance Center, Sonarchy from Vancouver, Holtzkopf from Vancouver, Scanner from the UK, and David Shea from the US and Australia. You can have those if you call me. 822-2487. Or if you prefer, You can get the Saturday ticket. That's open now to you. You and one more person. Just give me a call. 822-CITR 604-822-2487. Okay, and Saturday is Mark Hostler of Negative Land and Yuri Crane. Okay, so give me a call. We're going to be going into the Negative Land interview right now on Exquisite Corpse Radio. And that will pretty much close us out. One more Negative Land track afterward, and that will close us for the evening. So give me a call, 822-2487, to win these tickets, please. This is Bleak on CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver, Exquisite Corpse Radio. We're talking to Mark Hostler, is it, or Hosler?
It's Hostler, like ha ha ha, like you're laughing.
Yeah, I've always thought so, but recently my friend Luke has been calling you Mark Hostler.
Well, boy, is he mistaken.
Yeah, we'll get him.
It would be like ho ho Hostler.
Yeah, I know.
Wrong kind of laughter.
And it's not quite seasonal.
No, it's seasonally inappropriate as well.
So the Copyright Copyleft Festival.
Yes.
Is coming
up. They got all this old geezers to come in there and talk about all this stuff.
Yeah, I was wondering, are you tired of talking about the copyright issue?
Oh, yeah, sure, in a way. It's ancient history. The argument's been made over and over and over and over, and the whole thing's all settled and done. What more could there be to say? I mean, that's true, you know, but on the other hand, these ideas just keep never going away. The issues keep never going away. And so perhaps to a newer audience of people who haven't thought about it as much, it may seem new and seem fresh. You know, I don't know. I mean, I do lectures about our work all over the U.S. and all over Europe. And I've done about 95 of them in the last 6 or 7, 8 years or so, and it's just amazing to me that it really does it never goes away, and in fact it just keeps coming up in more and more ways. You know, once YouTube hit, you know, that just broke all this open even bigger and bigger in terms of appropriation, reuse, copyright, collage, mashups, all that kind of stuff.
So you're presenting a 90-minute video or movie, it says.
Nope.
On your website?
No.
No.
I hope it doesn't say that. I'm doing a 90-minute presentation where I'm going to show some short films as part of my presentation.
Let me see what it says here.
Yeah, let's get
it
this
says,
straight. Because if they aren't, I need to correct them.
It says, Adventures in Illegal Art is a 90-minute film and storytelling presentation by Mark Hostler.
Yeah, that would be correct. Notice
okay.
The
storytelling. Okay.
Yes, that is important, the and storytelling. I would say it's probably about 25% films and 75% is me talking. And
so there's no...
Yeah, I trace kind of the history of how Negative Land got started, and, you know, it goes back to 1980 when our first record came out, and it was and I was still in high school. And we were doing this cut-up tape collage stuff mixed in with our own crazy noises and sounds and kind of a bit of a pop song sensibility thrown in there. And we were cutting up tape with razor blades, using things taken out of one context and reusing them in a new one, repurposing
sure.
them.
Yeah.
And it's late, I'm tired, so my brain's a
That's
little
cool.
eager. But, you know, not concerned about copyright or anything, and the word sampling didn't exist then, and the whole the genre of hip hop and rap didn't exist. So, I mean, the idea that you should get money for this or get permission to sample and pay money for it, I mean, that just didn't exist. And we were doing this just because it sounded great to us. It was exciting. It was fun. It was different. We hadn't heard anything like it.
And you chose the name Negative Land. I was wondering where that came from.
Well, my answer for many, many, many years was always that I would name whatever Negative Land member was not present at the interview and say that you'd have to ask them.
Okay.
But the reality is much more kind of embarrassing, which is that I was really, really into German electronic music in this, you know, because this was 78, 79, 80, and I had discovered all this amazing stuff coming out of Germany. And when we were trying to, we decided that we would like to say we were a band. Now, we weren't a band, really. We hadn't performed anywhere, ever, when we made our first record. It was a complete, you know, bedroom studio creation. But we said, let's kind of say, let's give it a group name so that, let's sort of position ourselves, to use a, what I know as an advertising term. But, we want to set ourselves up as seeming like we're kind of in the pop culture, realm.
Yeah.
Doing weird experimental music stuff. So we should give it a name, like, hey, we're a band. So the name actually came from a group called Noi. It's from their first album. It came out in 1973. It's a very innovative, amazing, influential, avant-garde rock record. That's where the name came from. That's why it's spelled that way. Of course, it turned out that the name was very fitting. I mean, it turns out that as our work evolved over the years, increasingly as we were appropriating and reusing all this U.S. media, that what Negative Land has done, and really if you look back at all of our work, as much as it gradually got more and more political in a lot of ways, that in every level, our work has always been appropriating and collaging and using found things, and it's always been about America. It's always been about what it's like to be living in this country and being an American and being subjected to this, the levels of media and information and the power and politics and economics and all this stuff. And that just permeates all of our work.
Does your message change considering who's in power at the time, or is it always?
Well, we don't have a message. We don't set out to have one. So you're inferring the wrong thing there.
Okay.
We're responding to things, and we're doing work that's, a reaction to stuff. We don't sit around and say, we have a message, therefore we're making art. Because I think that just becomes propaganda, and you might as well be writing an essay. And we're trying to make, we're trying to make music, and we're trying to make art. And so it's tricky to do that and make it work. So obviously our work is, we're not doing love songs and we're not doing stuff about all the typical things that that music is about.
Yeah.
So how do you do that and yet make it not, didactic? And that's tricky. That's really tricky. And that's always been a challenge for us. That's why I think our work, luckily our work has a lot of humor in it, and it has a pretty healthy dose of pure dot of surrealism tossed into it too.
Oh yeah. So do you think, would Negative Land be the type of band they are now?
Would we exist if
there
we were
wasn't
Canadian?
If there wasn't an illegal aspect to that, what you've been doing over the years?
Well, like I said, we weren't aware of it being illegal when we started. We just were doing it. It just sounded cool, We liked the sound of it, and we hadn't heard anybody do it.
Yeah.
And as the years went by, and then finally, starting in the late 80s, there started to be lawsuits around sampling, which were, the first one was against Bismarcky for a record, I Need a Haircut, where he sampled from Gilbert O'Sullivan. And then De La Soul did an album called 3 Feet High and Rising, and they were sued by Flo and Eddie of the Turtles. And those were the first two kind of landmark cases that suddenly made everyone freak out, and it had a terrible, terrible effect on the whole evolution of hip-hop. I mean, it was awful for that genre of music, because suddenly you had these artists who had to just stop dead in their tracks with their whole creative process and rethink everything, because it all was maybe going to, they had to figure out who owned all these samples and pay the money and do all that. So as that world was arising in the more mainstream world, for Negative Land, it just made it more interesting. It's like, oh, wow, well, we're doing something that you're not supposed to do. Great.
Yeah. And you guys went into it full bore and sort of took them on, I guess.
Well, we took them on. How do you mean?
I don't know. You seem pretty fearless, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, just knew we were, but who were we really threatening? Who were we really
I don't know. Yeah, that's what I don't understand it.
No, I don't either. I mean, we're not hurting anybody, actually.
I know, it's free advertising, basically.
Either.
In my mind, it's like free advertising.
Yeah.
There it is.
No, the whole argument, in a way, is just absolutely silly that it has to be made. I mean, but I basically, all throughout human history, human beings have been creative. They've made works of art. They've developed new technologies and science and discoveries and all these things that are responding to the world we live in. I mean, there's nothing else you could possibly be responding to except the world we live in, right?
Right.
So when, you know, when human beings were living in caves and maybe they would... they might pull a stick out of the fire and they'd use the charcoal burnt end of it to draw a picture of a buffalo on the cave wall because that was what was outside the cave.
So,
and yeah. Now, you know, we zoom ahead thousands and thousands and thousands of years and the world we live in is one of pop songs and advertising and media and news and logos everywhere and information. And what are human beings going to do? Well, they're going to be creative and make work that responds to the world they live in, and they're going to use the tools they have available. And the tools now are not just, you know, sticks pulled out of a fire. It's copying technologies and these weird machines that can grab things and manipulate stuff, which is, you know, very fun to do. But I just see it as the creative human impulse, the spirit that is at work there is hasn't changed. It's exactly the same. It's the world we live in, and it's the tools we have available, and that's what we're doing. And that to me is what Negative Land is doing, and that is what, you know, since we started speaking out about this, you know, collage has just become more and more and more and more mainstream, and now we have groups like Girl Talk, who's like a superstar.
I was going to bring him up. Yeah, Greg Gillis.
Yeah, he's great. I love his work. He's fantastic, super fun, not political in any way. I mean, it's just fun to dance to.
But yeah, I was going to ask you what you felt about him and about basically he's kind of been. And I guess he gave you props. I heard him Friday on a Nardwar, the Human Serviette show. He was talking about how you guys sort of paved the way for what he's doing now and that he's much more free to do what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, that's very kind of him. I've met him. He's a really nice guy. His show is great. He's he's maybe 27 years old. I mean, yeah, he grew up listening to things like John Oswald and Plunderphonics and Negative Land, and he took a lot of these ideas. And he took them in a different direction. And I'd always been, you know, I got to tell him this when I met him. You know, I said, I'd been kind of predicting for years and years that someone was going to come along and take these more fringe, experimental, avant-garde type of collage ideas that we've been meddling with, and they were going to do something with it that kind of just had a more super pop accessible sensibility, and it would cross over and it would become huge. And I said, you are that guy. You are that thing.
He's definitely that guy, yeah.
And luckily, it couldn't happen to a nicer guy, and his work is totally brilliant.
Yeah, I've met him before as well. He's a very nice kid.
Yeah.
You know.
As a person who, I mean, I make this stuff, you know, I'm part of a group that's involved with it, but I'm also just, I'm a fan, I'm a student of music and print culture and art, and I'm fascinated by, it's fascinating to see how ideas from the fringes gradually percolate deeper and deeper into the mainstream, and then one day you wake up and then they're just completely normal and no one even thinks of them as being and transgressive or anything anymore. And really that's what's happened is, you know, the reason why Girl Talk isn't being sued is really a testimony to how much these ideas have become so normalized that even in the mainstream industry, of which he's completely ripping them off, you know, so to speak, quote unquote, ripping them off, for, you know, to stealing from them to make his music. Well, no one has sued him, you know.
I know. Elton John, it's fascinating. Not suing,
you know, all these people aren't, because I think that the change is just so obvious, and they just know that if they did it, they would look so absolutely bad and terrible. It would just be. It would be such a bad.
It's hard with him because he sounds like he's doing the most positive tribute to all of these little samples that he can possibly do. So, you know, why would they go after him? They'd look ridiculous,
right.
I guess. Yeah.
Right. But this is just what I like about this is that this is an example of how you see that the public use and behavior and creativity is way ahead of where the law is at. And that's part of what I hope gets discussed at this festival in Vancouver is not the discussion of is this right or is this wrong? Because I think that's become an old, stale, kind of boring discussion.
Good.
It's like what's interesting to talk about is, look, this is here to stay. This is not going away. It does not matter how much you criminalize it. You know, this is what your user population is going to do. They're going to download whole works, and they're going to take bits and pieces of whole works and collage them. They're going to do all this stuff. So what do you want to do about that? What do we want to do? And I had the experience last November. I've been asked to be on the advisory board of an intellectual property advocacy group in D.C. They're called digitalfreedom.org.
Okay. I was going to bring up Creative Commons, but that's a different thing.
Well, that's different. We've worked with Creative Commons, too. But this is just how to show you, again, how much things have changed. Where Negative Land's gone from seeing as being completely weirdo, freak, outlaw, you know, crazy guys, to now, you know, we helped write the sampling license for Creative Commons. They asked us to do that for them. And then a few years later, I was brought out to Washington, D.C. last November, and I was taken around on Capitol Hill to the House, to the offices of various senators, congressmen, and House subcommittees and judiciary committees on media and technology and copyright. And I gave a presentation about 8 or 9 times in the course of one day, all about collage and the future of what's going on with art and creativity.
So now you're the man. You're the man.
Well, it was totally weird because my politics I'm more like some socialist, democrat, anarcho-syndicate. Yeah.
Well, it says on your, I watched some of your Creative Commons, as a video interview sort of thing you were given, it said something like you are to, let me see, Creative Commons is the Sierra Club as Negative Land is to Earth First, sort of.
Yeah, we're more like the Earth Firsters. And I can see the value in terms of the political process and how change happens that Sierra Club has the ear of the more mainstream and they have a real important role to play. Mm-hmm. But Earth First has a real important role to play too because they help set the terms of the debate and the discussion and they pull it more to the left. Earth First does play an important role. So I can see us playing that role. And Sierra Club is very important. But I don't really want to be a full-time member of the Sierra Club because that's boring. You know, it's just no fun. Earth First is way more fun and interesting. So, you know, to just take that, I'm just taking the analogy kind of all the way there. I'll speak at some, you know, intellectual property conference at Duke University or MIT or Yale or someplace that's pretty respectable and kind of within the mainstream of academia, and they'll trot me out as kind of the token artist, which I think is kind of funny. But I'll do it, and I'll show up, and I'll try and give the argument, you know, some of what we're talking about today. You know, and say, look, this is where creativity is going, and you need to kind of embrace it. And that's what I was saying to these politicians. You know, I said, you have lobbyists coming into your office from your RIAA, and I think in Canada it's the CRIA, right? CRIAA or CRIA, right?
You know, I think it's something else, but I'm not too sure. I am American, actually, in Canada, so I pay attention to the American stuff a bit too much for being a dual citizen.
Yeah, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, I tend to be more focused on the U.S. still.
Do you have the Canadian Recording Rights Association, and I believe the initials are CREA.
Okay.
But anyway, we have the RIAA, and we also have the Motion Picture Association of America, and these are two very, very well-funded lobbying groups who are in D.C., they go and talk to all the politicians, and basically they'll trot out, you know, Sheryl Crow at their hearings, and they'll say, look at these poor artists, you know, we're trying to protect, they argue that they're trying to protect the artists and creativity and all that. And so when I was in D.C., I said, look, these people come into your office and they're telling you they represent, you know, all the artists and all the creators out there. And I said, they're not telling you the truth. I said, they do not. They represent a very, very tiny percentage of very wealthy creative people and musicians and filmmakers. But the fact is that there's this huge and growing population that is creating and distributing work in whole new ways that no one could have foreseen. And you have a set of laws that are not accommodating them. And these people are actually being very enterprising, very creative and innovative and new. And you don't want to stop them. You know, this is like your classic American sort of, you know, innovation and new stuff. And I was trying to, you know, explain this to, largely I was talking to Republicans. Because even though you think the Democrats would be more on our side, the Democrats are more funded by the RIAA and the MPAA. The whole entertainment industry gives them way more money. They don't give the Republicans the money because there's a cultural thing. The Republicans look at Hollywood as being more sinful. Sending bad messages.
And the Republicans came at you with their fangs, didn't they?
No, they didn't. Not at all. Because I was having these meetings because they were interested in talking to me, not because I was forced to.
No, I just had to say that.
Oh, okay.
I'm a mean-spirited person.
I basically hate and despise all the neocons and Republicans who have destroyed this country. But, you know, oh, come on. You know, they've completely... Our Constitution has been ripped to shreds. Our media doesn't do its job at all. I mean, we're as you know, Canadians, you know, that I've met are so much better informed about what's going on in the U.S. and what's going on in the world and politically.
Oh, I know, yeah.
You know, no, I mean, we're
well,
a bunch of...
No, even if... A lot of the, they're well informed about
dumbass ignoramuses in America who practically are just getting what we, you know, we're getting what we seem to want.
Why give them more information about what's really going on in the U.S. sometimes, and they cannot? They think it's all conspiracy stuff. They can't possibly be that bad. And I'm like, yes, completely that. But anyway.
Oh yeah, I know. I have to sometimes when I'm talking to people more conservative than me, or even my parents, you know, I have to say, look, this is going to sound like a conspiracy thing theory, but it is not. This is actually true.
Really going on.
But it's not something that our media, because of who owns the mainstream media, they aren't talking about it. But it actually is a fact, you know. Just look at what's happening with our healthcare debate. The fact that we're having one. Is completely immoral and totally insane. I mean, it's a human right.
The fact that we have to have that conversation about whether or not we want health care in this country is already starting from a completely right-wing position, and we should be starting, we should be... They're still controlling the conversation.
That's very well put, and that's absolutely right. Even having it, they're already in control of the debate. And what's also interesting is that in the last 8 years, the right wing used to kind of be able to, they felt like they had to pretend that it was not all about money, but they aren't even bothering anymore.
Because the
argument over this whole, the whole argument is, well, geez, it might actually make the insurance companies of America have less profit. Like instead of having a 400% increase in premium in payments, maybe it's only a 20% increase. Well, boo hoo hoo. You know, they're not even pretending anymore that that's the case. They just out and out just come out and say, "Yep, it's all about money." And really, you know, if you can't figure out how to make enough money and you're just going to die, well, then tough luck. You might as well, you know, just hurry up and die.
But anyway, let's get back. This is.
But it is related because the copyright stuff that we're up against is this same kind of level of absolutely stupid, you know. Thinking that's just so counterproductive, and ultimately, you know, it's if you follow out the corporate logic of copyright law of extending it, you know, in America it's the life of the creator plus 70 years. I think in Canada it's the life of the creator plus 50 years. But it means that in America, nothing made in your lifetime will ever come into the public domain. If you have a world where everything, the copyrights basically last for your entire life, nothing enters in the public domain, well, the whole balancing act of copyright was always supposed to be a balancing act. It's not supposed to give you an omnipotent ownership control in your work forever. The whole idea of copyright is to say, yep, we give you a limited amount of time to make some money because that encourages you to create work. But then it has to end, and it has to enter into the public domain because that's how ideas and art and science evolve.
Was that a 50-year rule, or was that supposed to be something else?
Well, when copyright began in America under the statute of, I think it's the statute of Queen Anne, statute of Anne, it was only 14 years.
14 so everything years? Expired.
Yeah.
And that was public domain, or...?
Yeah, and after 14 years, it entered into the public domain.
Holy
so
cow.
You had people like, I mean, I'll talk about this when I do my presentation, too. But Mark Twain, you know, the American writer, I mean, it drove him nuts because all of his books were coming into the public domain while he was alive. But guess what? It gave him the incentive to write more books.
Ooh, there you go.
You know, so an example I like to use is think of J.D. Salinger, the author of Catcher in the Rye. Well, it's kind of the only book he ever wrote. It's one of the most amazing books ever written. It's a very important book in literature.
Yeah.
Well, if his copyright had had expired in 14 years, what do you want to bet it would have really lit a fire under his butt and got him to write more great books? So that's
that's a good example. Okay.
Yeah, different thinking. Yeah. So just to kind of recap, Negative Land didn't get into this because we were fighting this fight or because it was illegal. We got into it because we were following our creative noses and just trying to make interesting, good work. And at some point, our creative intuitions and directions did slam headfirst into corporate thinking and copyright law. And we have tried our darndest to not back down, keep our sense of humor, keep doing work, hopefully set examples, you know, whether people like our work or not. we kept thinking throughout the 90s, we've got to keep doing this and set good examples of why this isn't a threat, why this is a legitimate art practice.
Yeah.
And maybe eventually, you know, more people will come around to this kind of thinking. And like I said, it's evolved to the point where, well, Jesus, you know, we have Girl Talk, and I'm getting asked to speak on Capitol Hill, and we're going to have a whole festival that relates to it in Vancouver, Canada, you know?
Now, speaking of Canada,
the funding for this come from? I'm not sure. Who's paying for my way to get
this? I was kind of wondering that. I don't know. It's a government thing.
It was your tax dollars.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably.
And I'm going to complain.
You do things like that in your country.
Now, the last time you were in Canada...
We don't support the arts in America unless it's completely bland, has no content or ideas, and innocuous, and it's a landscape painting or abstract corporate lobby art that doesn't mean anything.
Oh, and getting into my work there.
So, you know. Is that what you do for a living, is you make abstract corporate...
I frame that art.
Doesn't actually mean anything?
Yes.
Contentless work?
Yeah, I frame that art, and I ship it all over the world.
Non-threatening... puffery?
Yeah, that's
pays
me.
The bills, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I just work for the guy. That's all I do. Let me see. Now, last time you were in Canada, was that the fest in Toronto with the It's All in Your Head FM, the Negative Land?
Yeah, we performed in Vancouver at the Town Pump in the early 90s. I have not been back to Vancouver since. I've spoken about our work in Winnipeg. In Windsor, in Toronto, we've performed in Montreal and then in Toronto a number of times, as well as me doing lectures in Toronto. And we were part of the Plunderpalooza Festival 10 years ago in Toronto. Yeah, that was great. Yeah. I got to actually debate. Oh, what the heck is his name? I'm forgetting his name. It was the head of the Canadian Recording Industry Association. I actually debated him in public about all these issues.
Nice.
It was a strange experience.
I saw you in, I think it was 1993, do a improv thing with Steve Fisk.
Oh, in Olympia, Washington.
In Seattle.
Oh, in Seattle?
Yeah, it was really close to where I lived, right in Seattle. It was an improv... And you guys had these little Casio little samplers?
You mean it was just me, or it was actually Negative Wind?
It was you, just you, and Steve Fisk.
Okay. Oh, how about that? Yeah.
And you'd just been sued for the whole YouTube thing, and you're selling the tapes or something, and so I went and got one of the tapes of the YouTube.
Yes, well, that would have been back when
we
were shipping copies of it on cassette, because we didn't have the ability to download things like we do now. Yeah, everything's changed.
Yeah.
You can pop up your, just get things out there electronically and distribute it like this.
But,
so
you don't remember that show?
No, because I think you're confusing it. I think it was a Negative Land performance where Steve Fisk was the opening act and opened for us.
No, absolutely not. No, it was you guys sort of bouncing off each other. With sounds and stuff. It was fabulous. I remember it like yesterday.
Probably, but I genuinely can remember.
I've talked to Steve Fisk about that actually, and he remembers that. So
okay, well, I believe you. I believe Steve. I trust him implicitly. I generally can remember every show we've ever done or I've ever done. I mean, I don't have a brain that's been too addled by any substance. So I usually can. So I'm surprised I don't remember it. But there you go.
Well, okay, I just.
I'm
it was a bit memorable thing for me.
Yeah.
Very.
Anyway, so the thing I'm going to do at the Vancouver New Music Festival is kind of an overview of how our work kind of got to where it is now, and how we kind of unwittingly did get into these things following our creative impulses. And what happened? First, we did some pranks, hoaxes. We got on TV.
Oh yeah.
Sued more than a couple of times for our work. So I'll get into all that, and I have a bunch of films I'll show to illustrate these different points that I think are pretty fun to watch and make it more entertaining. And it's definitely a presentation that's geared toward, you don't have to just be knowledgeable of our work to enjoy it. I mean, it's definitely will work if you are just interested in these issues of ownership, media literacy, anti-corporate activism, pranks, hoaxes, you know, just kind of new kind of strategies of being creative in the digital age and all that stuff. If that interests you, you know, then you know you might yeah. like my spiel.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Now, when I grew up in around the Seattle and Tacoma areas, one of the radio stations that was omnipresent in my life, along with all the other ones, it was KJR. Was one that was like one of the big top 40 radio stations of the when I remember early 70s and all the way. And you guys did a spoof, a prank on KJR.
We sure did.
And got them to change their whole business practice.
Format.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Well, format.
They changed their format.
Now how exactly did that work? It was on, you've broadcasted on several pirate micro stations around the city, or?
Yes.
Yeah?
Well, what happened was, I mean, and this is sort of typical, to me, a pretty typical Negative Land kind of an idea where it has a sort of a weird, it's sort of a little screwy in a way.
Yeah.
And Richard in Negative Land, who lives in Seattle, has for a while, he noticed that this station KJR, which is you know, plays all the hits from, I think it promotes itself as playing all the hits. It was playing
the 60s and 70s.
All those hits from the 60s and 70s. He noticed that they were actually also playing hits from the 80s, but never mentioning it. And then there was a National Association of Broadcasters was having their national conference in Seattle. And so there was a counter conference going on to do with independent media. And I actually did a presentation on our work as part of it. And they were wanting to do a series of kind of micro radio pirate broadcasts where they were broadcasting on all these different frequencies all over the dial in Seattle. And they approached us saying, would you like to do some programming? So Richard came up with just, I thought, this really great, very funny, brilliant idea, which was he created this character of Jack Dickabitch. And that's a Polish spelling of the name there. It may sound like it's a bad word, but it's...
Yeah, I saw the spelling.
D-I-E-K-O-B-I-S-C-Z, Jack Dickabitch. And so Jack Dickabitch is supposedly this disgruntled ex-disc jockey from KJR.
Yeah, I was almost convinced. Yeah.
And he's going to expose them for the liars they are. And basically, you know, what a horrible, terrible, awful media station they are. Now, the fact is that this is actually inconsequential. Who really cares that they're doing it? But it's true. It's true that they really were lying. But
yeah.
So what? Big deal.
It's a big deal, yeah.
So what was great was
that they caved.
Well, he's a character who was attacking the right target for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
We liked that as a kind of a conceptual thing. And we made a 20-minute show of Jack going off the hook. And it's like he's locked himself in the station. And we were using all the KJR stings and jingles mixed in. And it made it sound like you were listening to KJR.
And the audio is out there. People can find
he's
that.
Attacked. Well, then, so what we did then is we burned it to about 8 different CDs. And we gave it to the people who were doing the counter conference. And we said, what we want you to do is put this in a loop and broadcast it for 24 hours straight on every single frequency you've got. So that when people are tuning the dial across the dial in Seattle, everywhere they go, they're going to hear this, what sounds like KJR, and this guy who's out of his mind.
Fantastic.
And then we even had somebody go into the National Association of Broadcasters playing it on a boombox and saying, hey, check this out. What is this? You know, this guy's like gone nuts. And who is this? And we then made a web page attacking them that looked like it was from fans of the station who were outraged that the station was lying about their format. So we had a lot of, you know, it was really pretty silly. I mean, we had a lot of fun with it. And in the end, it generated enough letters to the station and problems that they actually dropped all the 80s songs and cleaned up their format. And got it correct.
And so still, who cares, right?
Yeah.
Who really
cares? We put out a press release about it, and we put it up on our website. If you go to our website, negativeland.com, and go to the archive section, because the archive section has that broadcast up there.
It's great. And, it's fantastic. So,
thanks. I'm glad you like it. I really liked it too. Really, Richard's. I did a lot of the kind of coordinating of the whole thing, but it was Richard. Richard had the basic sort of seed of the idea of what to do, and created the character. And a lot of fun. I'm glad that you know that one because it's. I'm sorry that took a while to explain, but it's kind of.
No, that's good. Yeah. Hey, we talked to my buddy Luke and I, who does a show called A Noise on Wednesdays. We interviewed Don Joyce about 3 years now or maybe more.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, he was a great guy to talk to. He said one thing that was memorable. He said that he's been around the world. He's seen a lot of things. But the guys in Negative Land are different. What do you think of that?
I don't know. He sounds like he's talking about having sex with us or something.
He might have been. I don't know.
Yeah. But we all.
You mentioned CP8, so.
We all sleep in the same bed because that's the only way we could afford to live in the building and have our recording studio, which takes up most of the whole place we live in. And there was only one bedroom left over, so we had to all kind of pile in, and we got an extra king.
You guys still in the process of breaking up?
Yeah, we're always in the process of breaking. Actually, yes, perpetually so. It's okay. We all drive each other. At some level we can't stand each other. We drive each other completely insane. And it's a miracle that we're together after 30 years. You know, up to times we've broken up.
The ring represents a circle of life.
Yeah, the public has no
eternity.
Idea. It's kind of like your family, you know, where no matter how much your family drives you crazy and you'd like to quit your family, you can't because you're related to them by blood, family. So Negative Land is actually like that in some way, you know. So
raindrops on kittens and schnitzel on roses, nose cream on my nose, whiskers and crisp eyelashes with noodles, wild geese that fly with their wings tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. Ponies in dresses and warm, warm doorbells and brown raindrops, girls with blue whiskers tied up with noodles, wild kettles that fly with bright copper wings. These are a few of my favorite things. The dog bites, the bee stings. I simply remember my favorite things, and then I feel so bad. That sting on colored girls tied up with blue satin sashes, wild brown girls tied up in warm strings, wild, wild white girls that melt into nose cream. These are a few of my favorite things. Nose cream on ponies, nose cream on kittens, nose cream on roses and nose cream on mittens. Bells and 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 wild geese. When the bee stings, I simply remember my dog bites, and then I feel so, so bad.
The UBC Ski and Snowboard Club is a nonprofit, democratic, student-run organization dedicated to promoting the sports of skiing and snowboarding and the associated lifestyle.
We endeavor to make skiing and snowboarding accessible and fun by actively seeking out the best deals and discounts for our members, as well as organizing trips to local ski areas and setting up numerous social events.